All right, let's turn, please, to Exodus chapter 19 and Leviticus chapter 1. Two places in the Bible, Exodus chapter 19 and Leviticus chapter 1. And in so doing, if you've picked up the printed out notes for the day, notice we're going to be dealing today with Israel's worship. We'll be staying entirely in the book of Leviticus, and that will break into two parts. The first 17 chapters of Leviticus, which talk about worship in Israel, and then 18 through 27 that will talk about conduct in Israel. And that will complete out the book if we have time, which is Roman numeral 4 on the back sheet of your paper, which says what the author of Hebrews saw in the worship system of Israel. If we have time, we will get there this evening, which we will not have time to get to. Pretty sure we won't. All right, introduction to Israel's worship comes first, but before we do that, let's note in the great big picture where we are. We're at the period of Israel's history called the journeying period, started with the Exodus from Egypt in 1446, covering a period of 40 years, and the journeying period ending in 1406. And that subdivides into the trip to Sinai, Exodus 13 through 18, the time at Sinai, Exodus 19 to the end of the book, chapter 40 in Leviticus, and then the traveling from Sinai, which is Numbers, that will bring us right up to the edge of the Promised Land. We'll be ready to start the from period next Sunday at 10. Today we will be spending all of our time down at Sinai. Last week we looked at the law and the tabernacle. And this week we'll be looking exclusively in 3 hours at the worship system in Israel from the standpoint of the book of Leviticus. So let's turn in our notes to, then, introduction to Israel's worship, the book of Leviticus, and the first thing we need to get is some perspective on the book of Leviticus. And for that, we have made a little chart. Over on the left, we have Exodus chapter 19. And the right-hand column is Leviticus chapter 1. And what we want to see is, in Exodus 19, God appears for the first time to give the law. And then in Leviticus chapter 1, God is going to speak a second time, and we want to look at how your perspective was in Exodus 19 through the end of chapter 40, and how we come to the book of Leviticus. That whole thing is going to make a shift. And we'll have a different perspective beginning the book of Leviticus, and we want to focus on three contrasts between these two things. So for our passages, we're really comparing Exodus 19, verses 20 and 21, with Leviticus 1:1. So if you've got both open, Leviticus chapter 1 and Exodus chapter 19, we want to look at the different perspective that each one of these chapters gives. The first perspective is geographical. In Exodus chapter 19 and verse 20, and the Lord came down on Mount Sinai. Exodus 19 is given from Sinai, making a geographical note. Exodus 19 is given from Sinai. Keeping Exodus 19 open, go over to Leviticus 1:1. And notice that in Leviticus 1:1, God is in a different place now. It says, then the Lord called to Moses and spoke to him from, not Mount Sinai, but from the tent of meeting, or Leviticus 1 is from the standpoint of the tabernacle. In Exodus 19, then, the voice of God comes forth from Sinai. In Leviticus 1, the voice of God comes forth from the tabernacle, a change in perspective. The second emphasis is the message that was delivered in 19 and the message of Leviticus 1, going back to chapter 19. The message, and let me give it first, and then we'll see it in the text. The message from Sinai is basically, stay away. Or, keep back. Don't come near. Maintain your distance. I'll be on the mount. Don't you come to the mount. Don't even touch the mount. Now, where is the message, stay away? Chapter 19, for example, and verse 12. 19:12 says, "And you shall set bounds for the people all around, saying, beware that you," and catch the next four words, "do not go up." What is that saying? Paraphrased. It's saying, stay away. Chapter 19 and verse 12. Message, paraphrase, stay away. Then you come to verse 21 of chapter 19. "Then the Lord spoke to Moses, go down, warn the people, lest they break through to the Lord." So in the words, "lest they break through," is a warning saying what? Stay away. Chapter 19 and verse 21. Verse 23 of Exodus 19, "Moses said to the Lord, the people cannot come up." What's that saying? It's saying stay away. They cannot come up to Mount Sinai, for thou didst warn us, saying, set bounds. And set bounds is saying stay away. So the message then of Sinai from the presence of God is keep back. Now, keeping that still open, go back to Leviticus chapter 1. And the message of Leviticus chapter 1 as God addresses the nation from the tabernacle is, come near. You see the importance of the difference in perspective in Exodus from Sinai and Leviticus from the tabernacle, an entirely different message. Now, here's where that's found. If we will look at Leviticus 1 and verse 2, "Speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, when a man of you brings an offering," and there is a key word, the word offering, coming from a Hebrew word that means, a verb meaning, come near. Come near is wrapped up in the word for offering. If any man brings a coming near offering is the idea. So the message is different. The third contrast is in Exodus 19, the emphasis is on 19 on through 40 is on place of worship. Because in 19 through 40 we have the blueprint for the tabernacle and we have the building of the tabernacle. When we get to the end of the book of Exodus, God has arrived in the place of worship, namely the tabernacle. Now Exodus, is, or rather Leviticus, will give a new emphasis. It is going to say, all right, now that we know the place of worship, let's begin with the practice of worship. Place of worship, tabernacle. Practice of worship revolves about sacrifices. Burnt meal, sin, trespass, offering, peace, and sin and trespass offering, and so forth. So this then basically is our difference in perspective, and we're really ready to say to Exodus 19, let's lay this aside. Here is what we're going to look at today. We're going to see God in the tabernacle. We're going to say, look, come near, I want you to worship me. And we're going to be dealing with the practice of worship in terms of the sacrifices. And one additional thing we're going to be looking at, for those who practice worship in the tabernacle by means of sacrifice, there's a way to live. And that way to live will be the latter part of the book of Leviticus. All right, that is then our first point in our study this morning, the perspective of Leviticus. Now, why is the book written? Or, B, in outline, purpose of Leviticus. What is purpose in the entire book? Now, I'm going to put these things down without necessarily assigning passages to them right now, because I think you'll see this coming through all the way through the book. The purpose of Leviticus is, number one, to show Israel how to worship as a holy nation. Purpose is, number one, how to worship as a holy nation. if we would read parallel history to the book of Leviticus, we'll find that there were all kinds of nations, almost without exception, all of whom were worshiping some kind of deity, self-made, self-concocted deity. God is going to take one nation, put a circle around her, and saying, look, here is the way true worship operates. And it will be exemplified in Israel, and God will explain specifically how they are to worship. However, they are not to be just engaged in a priesthood, burnt sacrifices. Worship is not to be ritual. There's ritual there, but conducted with ritual is, there is the how to conduct themselves as a holy nation. And so our second purpose is how to conduct themselves. Now those two points, and I really didn't leave you a whole lot, I didn't leave you any room, for what we'll be taking a little time on, to say that those two points constitute the two halves of the book of Leviticus. And I think we'll be able to establish by comparing the two halves that the worship is the stress of the first part and conduct is the stress of the second. Now, since I did not put that in a 1-2 fashion, let's take time right now where we're looking at the purpose of Leviticus to locate that in notes. Come down on your page 1 and you notice Roman numeral 2 is content outline. Okay? Under content outline, worship regulations in Israel, boldface type, 1 through 17. That's the first half of the book. Now flip over to page 2. Just over halfway down the page, boldface, capital letters, you've got conduct regulations in Israel, 18 through 27. All right? Those are the two halves of the book, and basically, all of our study today will be revolving about those two halves. And the two halves then would be your worship regulations in Israel coming in with the purpose of how to worship, and then your conduct regulations in Israel is how to conduct themselves. Those are the two thrust points, and I'll take time to establish that those are valid divisions of the book of Leviticus as we proceed. Now, you can't deny, in reading the book of Leviticus, when we get to chapter 10, a couple of the priests will get a little bit careless about the mixture of incense that they use for the offering, and or the mixture of fire to light the offering, which seems very trivial. But in that triviality, we'll end one chapter with the fire of God comes down and consumes the burnt offering. And a priest kind of swings his keychain around and says, well, let's see, what do we have on the shelf to light the fire with today? And he makes the wrong mixture that was not prescribed by God. And lo and behold, after the fire comes down and consumes the burnt offering in chapter 9, a priest makes a mistake and lights the fire with the wrong mixture. And lo and behold, the fire of the Lord descends and consumes the priest. And that is end of story of Aaron's two sons called Nadab and Abihu. So that even that incident alone says, look, there's something more intended in the book of Leviticus besides how to worship and how to live. There must be a demonstration of a third thing in the book, and that is to stress God's holiness. Now, I will guarantee you that these points in proceeding through the book will become very, very dominant as we proceed this morning. That is the purpose, basically, of the book of Leviticus. Now, let me give a little support of that purpose from giving you some key words in Leviticus. This is, we could go through the content of it as we will and see these purposes. But are there any words that seem to keep coming back to us? For example, if we say the emphasis in the book of Leviticus is to stress the holiness of God, then we ought to note that the word holy occurs in the book of Leviticus 87 times. That's prominent. There is the idea of how to worship. We find the word atonement in the book of Leviticus 49 times. Now here's the big one. If you would trace the word sacrifice, or if using King James, some synonyms, oblation and offering, sacrifice, oblation, offering, three synonymous words, you will find them occurring in the book of Leviticus some 300 times. And that's got to reveal and manifest an emphasis and a stress that we've got in this particular book. So we're approaching today in our 3 hours of study how God wanted Israel to worship, and the thing that is just put right up in front of us is the idea, if you're going to approach God, the key word you must have in your mind, there's got to be an offering. There's got to be a sacrifice. There's got to be an oblation. And that will be occurring over and over. And connected with that, that offering or that sacrifice served to atone. So that we could really wrap that into the idea. And we could also include the first one. The sacrifice has to atone for man because God is holy. So let's just figure that over 400 times we're going to get punched by God saying in our study today that you cannot approach me in my holiness apart from a sacrifice that atones for your sin. And that will be the drumbeat that will come throughout the entire book of Leviticus. All right, now let's start with a simple content outline of Leviticus. And in our content outline, we have broken the book into two parts. The two parts, we've already pointed out where they are in the notes. Bold-faced, worship regulations in Israel, page 1, 1 through 17. And then bold-faced, conduct in Israel, 18 through chapter 27, the end of the book. Now, if we say it breaks into two parts, we ought to ask and answer, why? What's the justification for that? And if you're a good Bible student, and if you're a good listener, your first approach when I say Leviticus breaks into two parts is to listen and say, all right, I hear you. You've broken it in chapter at the end of chapter 17 and said that there are two parts revolving around worship and conduct. And if you're a good listener, you're going to say, all right, I hear what you say. Now I put up my defense. Prove that you're right. And that's what I want to do in this little section here, for which I've left you no room in the notes. Okay? I'll put it down into part one and part two here and say why I would put it in those two halves. Number one is if you read through part one, the stress is on worship. And in part two, the stress is on conduct. Now go to chapter 18 and let me give you some justification for doing that. Chapter 18 introduces something in the way of content that forces us to say the shift of emphasis is away from the offerings and onto how we ought to live. Chapter 18, and let's read through the first five verses. And I think you'll be convinced by those verses that we definitely have an emphasis now on conduct, how to live. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, I am the Lord your God. You shall not do. That's a focus on conduct, isn't it? The way you act. You shall not do what is done in the land of Egypt where you lived, nor are you to do what is done in the land of Canaan where I am bringing you. You shall not walk, it's conduct, isn't it, in their statutes. You are to perform, that's conduct, my judgments and keep my statutes to live in accord with them, that's conduct. I am the Lord your God. So verse 5, you shall keep my statutes and my judgments, by which a man may live if he does them. I am the Lord. None of you shall, let's see in verse 5, which in 6 you begin to go into some regulations, but notice the emphasis in chapter 18 shifts to conduct. So my first evidence for a change in The stress of the book is with 18, 1 through 5. All right? Second justification, that you've got two parts to the book. Part 1 is going to emphasize purification from sin. Part 2 is going to emphasize punishment for sin. Or the part 1 through 17 is going to have its major upfront emphasis in there is a way to be forgiven when you sin. And chapter 18 through the end is going to stress when you sin, there is definitely to be punishment. Now, can we justify that? Go back to chapter 4. In this, I'm going to give you about half of the references that emphasize how to be purified or forgiven from sin. Then I'm going to read off the rest for you to look up when you get home. Leviticus chapter 4, verse 20. It says, "He also shall do with the bull just as he did with the bull of the sin offering. Thus shall he do with it. So the priest shall make atonement for them, and they shall be forgiven." Emphasis, purification or forgiveness of sin. Chapter 4, verse 20. Chapter 4, verse 26. It says, "And all its fat he shall offer up in the smoke on the altar in the case of the fat of the sacrifice of the peace offerings. Thus the priest shall make atonement for him in regard to his sin, and he shall be forgiven." Emphasis, purification from sin. Leviticus 4:26. Leviticus 4 again and verse 31. "Then shall he remove all its fat, just as the fat was removed from the sacrifice of the peace offerings, and the priest shall offer it up in smoke on the altar for a soothing aroma to the Lord. Thus the priest shall make atonement for him, and he shall be forgiven." Stress in verse 31, purification. Verse 35. "Then he shall remove all its fat, just as the fat of the lamb is removed from the sacrifice of the peace offerings, and the priest shall offer them up in smoke on the altar, on the offerings by fire to the Lord. Thus the priest shall make atonement for him in regard to his sin which he has committed, and he shall be forgiven." Verse 35. All right, I'm going to stop my reading there and give you some others you can look at. Chapter 5 and verse 10. Chapter 5 and verse 13, verse 16, verse 18, chapter 6 and verse 7. We've looked at only the first four, and that leaves five more that will give the same emphasis, and it will have some kind of expression, "He will be forgiven, they will be forgiven, or it shall be forgiven," and so forth. Stress in Exodus 1 through 17, forgiveness of sin. Now, when you come to the second half of the book, and let's go over now to chapter 19 of Leviticus, the emphasis is going to be on punishment for sin. And it's one of the things that justifies Leviticus 18 through the end being a second half to the book. Chapter 19 and verse 20. "Now, if a man lies carnally with a woman who is a slave acquired for another man, but who has in no way been redeemed or given her freedom, there shall be punishment." And then he prescribes that the punishment is not to be capital in this case, but nonetheless there is to be punishment. Now, from here on out, and I think we can best demonstrate it in chapter 20, notice when we looked at Leviticus 4, it was just one verse after another, verse 20, verse 26, verse 20, 31, verse 35, same thing in chapter 5, of saying you can be forgiven. Now, the drumbeat shifts in chapter 20, and it is punishment, punishment, punishment. And let me give some, and I will give you the following, and then the rest I will give you to look up for yourself. Chapter 20 and verse 2, verse 5, verse 6, verse 10, verse 12, and verse 13. Now let's look at those, and then the rest I'll give to you. Notice in all of these, the stress is on punishment. Chapter 20, verse 2. You shall also say to the sons of Israel, any man from the sons of Israel or from the aliens sojourning in Israel, who gives any of his offspring to Moloch, shall surely be put to death. That's punishment. And he prescribes the way he is to be put to death, namely by stoning. Chapter 20 and verse 5. If a person does a certain thing, then I myself will set my face against this man and against his family, and I will cut off from among the people both him and all those that play the harlot after him. And that all spells out loud and clear punishment. Verse 6. To the person who turns to mediums and to spiritists to play the harlot after them, I also will set my face against that person and will cut him off from among his people. That's punishment. Verse 10. If there is a man who commits adultery with another man's wife, one who commits adultery with his friend's wife, the adulterer and the adulteress shall surely be put to death. That's punishment. Verse 12. If there is a man who lies with his daughter-in-law, both of them shall surely be put to death. Verse 13. If there is a man who lies with a male as those who lie with a woman, homosexuality, both of them have committed a detestable act. Old Testament interpretation of homosexuality, detestable act. They shall surely be put to death. How would 20th century America fit in Israel? Can't you see the Kansas City Star? Can you see what kind of cartoon Lee Judge would make off of that? Can you see what the editorials would be? Can you see what the current opinion would be in the light of this? God is serious in saying sin is sin. And when you sin, you die by divine standards. So we have some real strong red blood flowing throughout the Old Testament that is quite important in the second half of the book of Leviticus. Can you see the contrast? The first half, bring your offering, you can be atoned for, you can be forgiven. Second half, emphasis on punishment for. A third and fourth contrast will be, the third one, is in part one of Leviticus, the emphasis is on the place, namely the tabernacle. In the second half, the emphasis is on the person and his conduct. First 17 chapters says, here's what goes on at this place in the tabernacle. The second part says, here's what goes on and should go on in your person in terms of daily living. A third, or fourth rather, contrast between the two is in the first half, the emphasis is on ceremonial defilement. And in the second half, emphasis is on spiritual defilement. Now let me define what's involved in each one of those terms. When we talk about being ceremonially defiled or spiritually defiled, what is the distinction? What do we mean by that? Basically, by this, when you are ceremonially defiled, that means you have done something non-moral that qualifies you from worship. For example, let's suppose you would touch a dead body. Now, there's nothing morally wrong, nothing that would spiritually defile you. We certainly wouldn't say today that if you touch a dead body that you have morally defiled yourself. You've done something that is morally wrong. You have done something that is spiritually wrong. But in the Old Testament, you would be disqualified ceremonially. You could not engage in certain worship practices. Some of the ceremonial defilement you couldn't help. A woman, for example, during her menstrual period would have certain ceremonial defilements. She couldn't help that. But that would have to do with your ability and your qualification to involve yourself in the worship system in Israel. So you have certain things that are ceremonial. The first half of Leviticus gives more emphasis to things that you can do, like touching a dead body, that would disqualify you ceremonially. Unfortunately, this became a fetish. Remember that when the Jews crucified Christ, they had to get him down and in the grave before 6 o'clock in the evening. For what reason? Passover was starting. And we can't have this involvement with the dead body during Passover, and we've got to be clean, quotes, to keep our ceremonial Passover. And as the tendency always, the ceremony tends to overshadow the spiritual. The spiritual defilement would simply be something was done that was wrong morally. And we read several moral sins that were involved here. So that is the emphasis primarily in the second half of the book. All right, now we're ready to start with first half, worship regulations in Israel, 1 through 17. Now, in both of these two parts, you do have, I think, a stress, an emphasis. And in part 1, the stress that we're going to get is going to be quite clear. It is going to be a stress on the basis of fellowship with God. The basis of fellowship is sacrifice. That's going to be the stress, and we're going to see that coming up in front of us all through these first 17 chapters. Israel and individual Israelites, if you're going to have fellowship with God, that fellowship has got to be rooted and based on sacrifice. And this is a good time to say that we're physically set up this morning to proclaim that message here on the table in front of the pulpit or the barricade or whatever we call this. You've got communion set up, the cup and the bread. What's all this saying? If we as men and women are going to have fellowship with God, it's through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. And the bread, standing for His body, and the cup, standing for His blood, is simply saying, and we're going to symbolize that this morning, is simply saying the only way we have fellowship with God is through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. Now, as we study through Leviticus in the early half, God is going to be saying that same lesson to Israel. It won't be with the communion table. It's going to be with animals, with blood shedding, with the whole temple, a tabernacle scenario is going to be saying that. And we're going to use some slides today, which I hope will show you through to be able to identify visually with the fact that if you lived in Israel, you were all of the time reminded you can have fellowship with God only through sacrifice. You would smell it as the offerings were burnt. You would see it as the smoke went up from the offerings. You would hear it, because we'll have a picture of the high priest today, and the high priest or the priest had on the bottom of their garment bells, so that if you were in the proximity of the temple, every time that priest made a move, you heard bells. And you were reminded there is an ongoing, continual sacrifice. There's a priesthood. You can't reach God except through a mediator. And that would be drummed into your sight, your hearing, your senses from every standpoint. And as a matter of fact, we'll see, I don't think we'll get to it until tonight, a picture of how right at the center of the city was the tabernacle and all of the tents were centered about it. The whole life was God-centered, so that you couldn't function in Israel without saying, center of city. City hall is what? Presence of God. City hall is where the smoke goes up. City hall is where the sacrifice is made. And if we're ever to have fellowship with God, we got to look towards city hall. And that will be the thrust that makes Israel completely unique as far as a nation is concerned in the Old Testament. All right, now let's go into some of these worship regulations. The stress is going to lie on the basis of fellowship resting on the sacrifices. And we begin then with A, the offerings. Chapter 1 through chapter 7. Simply a content outline. We're looking now at the offerings in Israel. 1 through 7. Now notice those are divided off for you into two categories. And we'll be looking at the five basic kinds of offerings. The first kind was what is called a sweet offering. The sweet offerings are, one, the burnt. Two, the grain. Three, peace. P-E-A-C-E. And those that did some chapter division for us in the Bible did us a favor and made them equal in chapters. The burnt, chapter 1, grain, chapter 2, peace, chapter 3. The second category are the non-sweet offerings. And they are in order, number 1, the sin offering, and number 2, the trespass offering. And again, our chapter division is pretty good. Sin offering, chapter 4, trespass offering, chapter 5. Then we'll find that 6 and 7 basically have some development on those, but as far as content is concerned, I think we can safely think of the first 7 chapters in terms of these offerings. All right. In closing then, let's take a quick look at 4 slides.
Okay.
This should orient us to what we have been looking at and what we will be looking at. All right, here is, you might want to, for this, flip back to last Sunday's notes on your second page. I believe it was second page, wasn't it? Yes, a third page in Tabernacle and its Furniture. Now, if you've got that, let me show you what we're looking at. The diagram you have here on your sheet is made up only of this. All right? You do not have this in the diagram that we handed out. If you want to use your imagination, use the edges of your paper to be this. All right? Got the perspective on it? The edges of your paper are this. All of this outside of this is called outer court. If you were an Israelite, you could go to the outer court if you wished. This was, again, outer court. Right here, you have the entry to it with a beautiful gate. Here you've got the, there's your sacrifice right there. We've looked at the burnt meal, peace, sin, trespass. There's where they get offered, right in here. And with that, you would have inside the animals, here's a stack of wood, here are priests cutting up parts of animals as was prescribed, how the fat is separated from other parts. These would be slaughtering tables where the animals were killed. And coming up to this, though it's not too visible in here, you would have a ramp leading up to the place they could place the offering. This over here is the pillar, remember, that guided them. Pillar of cloud by day, pillar of fire by night. So that's your overall picture. Now we're going to step into this thing closer. Okay? Okay, we've gotten in a little bit closer just for a little more detail. And basically you can see your sacrificial tables more closely. There's the ramp coming in here. Notice how this is elevated up to the brazen altar and so forth. Okay, next picture. Okay, that's simply another view looking down with the priests involved in their activity. All right, and there's a closer up yet. These priests, notice, have got on a white tunic. We're going to go down the garments of the priest, but just notice their white tunic. The high priest is going to have some extras on his. He'll have a blue garment coming down the outside, but basically those are white linen tunics. And just note in your mind, the symbolism behind the white tunic is personal righteousness. Log that. That's very important. Personal righteousness is the emphasis there.
Here's a slaying of an animal, catching of the blood, and so forth. All right, we'll be ready to start with, in our next session, going into what is involved in some of those offerings in Israel. Father, we're thankful today again for your word. We pray that through this graphic lesson in the Old Testament, in the book of Leviticus, that we'll learn that there is no fellowship with you apart from sacrifice. And may we learn that that sacrifice in our age is final, it's full, it's complete. It is Jesus Christ. And therefore, may we learn to put our trust in him if we have not for salvation, and then learn to put our trust in this high priest for our daily needs in Christ's name.